strong in the bowl, who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last one.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it's been a... Look, it's been a long off-season already, I think. Perhaps it's just the form of the Australian cricket team, but the AFL season feels a long way away.
Yeah, look, I am looking up... I don't know, it's just this time of year. There's a bit of hope. There's new faces doing well in pre-season. That you can always suspend disbelief that ex-player's going to... kill it this year because you haven't seen them play in 4 or 5 months, so you can believe that they'll magically transfer over the preseason. I'm looking at Richmond websites far more than I was towards the end of last year, just because it's different and it's exciting, and I'm hanging out for new news.
Well, speaking of news, we've just had the pleasure of recording an interview with Andrew Sloman, who's taken some time off writing internet-busting articles for the club website to do an interview with us that we'll run at the end of the show. And yeah, it's a really good insight into the pre-season camp.
Yeah, and just to clarify, it is Andrew Sloman speaking as a well-informed fan, not as an official for the Richmond Football Club.
Yep, very much
but,
so.
But he's a lovely guy and very insightful about the Tigers.
Yeah, insightful and passionate. Really enjoyed the interview.
And he's been watching people train, so he's got my favourite type of preseason gossip, which is training the house down.
Yep. Very, very happy about that. Look, we've just done the interview, but so it's not spoiling to say. Actually, one of the things I'm most interested about the preseason that we didn't get a chance to talk about was the Sydney Stack, who's trying out for our rookie list.
And looks like by all the mail will be signed.
Oh, so it's one of these things that, you know, if we just drafted him as a second round rookie pick, he'd have attracted almost no interest whatsoever. But because, you know, it's not certain if he's going to be on the list, and he's a reasonably high profile guy. While the club website hasn't really been covering it, he's attracted quite a lot of attention on the fan forums, and yeah, all the signs are is that he's going to sign with the club pretty soon.
Yeah, there's been people saying his disposal and some of the practices has been lovely, and he's shown silky skills. And as we pointed out in one of, I think, our draft podcast, that All Australian under 18, a lot easier to get excited about him than one or two of our other rookie picks will go on.
Well, our other rookie pick was only one other.
Yeah, oops. Yeah, it's just there is the mysterious upside to him. So good on him. There were questions about he didn't get drafted because of off-field concerns, and thus far he's done enough to get himself on an AFL list. So good on the kid, and exciting guy to have on the Richmond list.
Yeah, so look, a couple of things I wanted to cover before we get to the interview, but off-field news before Christmas, I just wanted to get your reaction to three contract extensions signed. Kane Lambert's got himself an extension through 2022, which is his age 30 season. Callum Coleman-Jones has got himself an extension to the end of 2021. He was, I think, out of contract at the end of this year, so that's an extra 2 years. And Ryan Garthwaite's got himself an extra season to the end of 2020.
Well, as I've said many times before, I don't get too excited about contract extensions when you don't know the money, which is you don't know the money for any of them. In a salary cap league, that kind of information is quite important. But I will note that Garthwaite's contract goes over the period that Dave Asprey is a free agent. So I wondered whether that was a deliberate staggering, having a backup option if Asprey's price becomes too high that we can't match.
Yeah, I was interested in that. I mean, he's had a interrupted preseason, but the people track watchers keep saying what a big boy Ryan Garthwaite is these days.
Yeah, it's an investment. We clearly think he's a viable AFL player.
Well, speaking of viable AFL players, so Callum Coleman-Jones, you know, only 1 year into his initial two-year deal that he signs when he gets drafted, but he's now locked down for the next three seasons, which is that's a vote of confidence.
Indeed.
But I think that's also as much a situation. He's a former South Australian captain of the under-18s, and both South Australian clubs have their number one ruckman over the age of 30. So, it's just sort of putting two and two together. But, I think it's both a vote of confidence in CCJ, but also a recognition that, there's a potential market for him.
Yeah, and at the very least, having him under contract, it doesn't mean you'll keep him, but it does mean it does increase your leverage in a negotiation.
Definitely. Look, the other one, Kane Lambert, apparently there's a bit of a strategy with the key players of, giving them an extra year for a bit less money. So, they're trading off certainty for a bit of cash, and that's how we can keep the group together. But look, if there's one guy I don't worry about in the slightest, whether or not he's still going to train like a madman, even once he's got a long-term contract extension, it's Kane Lambert.
Yeah, fair point.
So that's pretty much all the off-field news. They had an announcement sort of confirming that we were getting an AFLW team, which confused me because I thought they'd already announced that we were getting an AFLW team, and that's why we had a VFLW team this year. But, good on them. In a year's time, I'll be paying far more attention to AFLW than I do now, because, as ever, I am more of a Richmond fan than I am an AFL fan.
Speaking of non-first-grade Richmond Tiger news, as you know, Nick, and some of the listeners do, I'm a mad LA Rams fan.
It's exciting times for you. Yeah.
So I'm NFL mad right now, and if anyone wants to talk to me about suboptimal fourth down decision making in the NFL, I'd happily talk about that for an hour. But I've been thinking about a Richmond angle.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about if you were creating an American football team out of the Richmond team, which players would you draft first?
Yeah.
Now, I think just before, and so I've been thinking about a few players and what position they would play.
Yeah.
So if you don't at least have a passing knowledge of American football, skip forward 3 minutes. and the first thing I'll say is acknowledge that they are quite different sports, because obviously American football is stop-start, whereas in AFL...
It's extremely explosive sport as well.
Exactly, and whereas in AFL, if you don't have well or well above average aerobic fitness, you're never going to make it. So it's quite a high bar to cross. But I have some ideas of Richmond players who I would love to see, who I think could transition to the NFL. Who would be decent American football players? I actually think in practice only one or two of them would even have a moderate shot of making the actual NFL, but they might have been decent college players.
Okay.
So the one, I'll leave the one who I think will make it, who will definitely make it till a bit later.
All right.
But one that I liked straight away, and I didn't want to just pick our best players, but if you think about Dylan Grimes, his length, his speed, and his defensive intensity, him as a defensive back as either a slightly oversized corner, and I know there are hardly any white corners, but just...
He's probably a safety.
Probably a safety. I agree, but you can see him as a defensive back, and I quite like that one. And another one, before I give you a chance to nominate one, I really like Alex Rance as a defensive end. If you know defensive end,
he was my top one, but he was a linebacker, because I actually think the The Alex rants closing fast in space is one of my favourite things in football.
Oh, okay. So I like Alex Rance because he's quite bendy and athletic, and he can sort of stay upright even when he's half over. And that's very much a defensive linesman's trait, coming around the edge, beating the left tackle. So, you know, and it's also, you know, phenomenal athlete. That's a defensive end is an athlete's position. Don't ask me why I used to play it, but there you go. So they're two that I liked. And were there any you'd like to chip in?
Oh, look, one of the positions, slot wide receiver, really depends on being able to change direction really quickly. And I just thought that's Dan Rioli in a nutshell. And he's about the right size for it as well, but he's just got that instant movement that you need.
Yeah, he'd be one of the few I'd actually say might actually make the NFL, because he is a good enough athlete and for all those reasons you said. Koch, I think, could have been... Pete Koch could have been a third down back with his quick change of direction, nice hands, nice little ability to scat his way through packs. I could have seen him in the sort of... Not Ed McCaffrey. Who's the third down back for the Carolina Panthers, who's getting far too many touches?
McCaffrey. Yeah.
McCaffrey, sorry. I could see him as a McCaffrey type. Dusty, you'd have to pick. I don't know what position he'd play. Maybe as a wide receiver, because you have to use his ball skills. You know, he is our best player, best athlete.
Yeah, he's a tricky one, I think. Yeah, because, I mean, he's brute strong as an AFL player, but I think, it's hard to think what role he'd be able to play.
Because you'd have to use him as a ball player, because he's too skillful. He's a tough one.
And he doesn't like to tackle.
Now, Nanku could probably be a left tackle. I mean, he's quite tall. He's taller than your average NFL player. That's about. But he's right.
He's just right for a tackle, I think.
Exactly. But it's one of the few positions, and he's nasty, and he's got the coaches would like him, because he likes one of the key things in that position is having a nasty streak, which Nank definitely does. But the one I love. Before I give you two wild cards, was there anyone else you wanted to say?
No, I wondered about Ivan Soldo for the same reasons, just because he's a truly enormous human being.
Don't think he's a good enough lateral athlete, though.
No, true.
Well, actually, I'll give you my two Smokies.
Yeah.
Late draft picks that might make the roster. Towner as a linebacker.
Oh, yeah. Because he mean, just... Because he just wants to hurt people.
Yep, and got the right attitude and the right size. And George Castagna.
Oh, really?
As a defensive back.
Huh.
Because, you know, very good athlete, very fast, likes to hit, and willing. Also as a special teams player. But the one I love, the one that I would draft first, who I think could have made the NFL, is Jack as a tight end.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. Just got the movement skills. You don't have to be super fast, which is lucky, but you just need to catch everything, which he does.
Yep, and have good intuition for the game. He would find the holes in the zones. He's willingly uses his body. He's big enough to be a blocker. He's smart. It's a position that requires, you know, because you block and catch, a position that where intelligence helps. Everything about, I genuinely, if I was to bet on one of them who could have been an NFL player had they started playing in American football early in their life, I would bet Jack.
Yeah.
He's definitely my favorite.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yep. Cool. Sorry. Well, thank you for indulging that little exercise, and go Rams.
Very good. Look, the one thing I wanted to talk about before we get to the interview, and this is only vaguely related to Richmond, but did you see the Carlton and St Kilda videos from draft night that they put on the AFL website?
Oh my God, I only saw the Carlton one, but...
the St Kilda one was a bit better, and it actually helped to highlight why the Carlton one was such a train wreck.
Well, let's talk about that. So you can just, if you Google Carlton 2018 draft video.
If you go to the AFL website and sort videos by Carlton, it's there in mid-December.
Yeah, so, and we've had someone who knows the sort of, who might have had some behind-the-scenes knowledge who, I mean, one of your first thoughts, Nick, wasn't it? It was so bad you thought they were putting it on?
Yeah, I thought it must have been staged.
But then it turns out that the camera was really unintrusive, and it was someone who knew what they're talking about thought that they probably weren't. It was probably genuine.
Yeah, so I genuinely were. No, you know, sort of a beloved trope of right-wing conspiracy theories is that some of these mass shootings have been actually staged by crisis actors rather than real people. And I watched the Carlton people, and I honestly thought that you could put up a credible conspiracy theory that this was a bunch of actors who'd been had 5 minutes briefing on what they were meant to say.
Yes, actors with a script written by someone who's never been in this actual situation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my favourite bit, so just to set the scene, you know, there's a whole bunch, there's a room of 10, 15 people, you know, all sitting around the draft.
Actually, both teams had ridiculous quantities of people in the room proportionate to who was actually making decisions about anything.
So just to set the table, it's draft day. There's only one draft day in AFL.
It's Christmas. Christmas for recruiters.
It is the one day of the year. There aren't that many picks. You know, most teams pick, there's 100 at most good prospects, as opposed to, say, NFL, where you've got, you know, 300 to 400 players and more teams, more picks. It's a pretty simple process. You know all the moving bits. There aren't that many other teams. You know, you would have thought the factors in the 3 or 4 picks you're going to make, you would have game planned every little scenario. That's what I assumed that AFL teams do. And I mean, the first thing that struck me is they're sitting there. You know, they're all sitting around there wisely. In the Carlton video, the Flanix of hangers on, and they're debating prospects like. This is draft day. Sure, yeah. We've been looking at them for months.
Watching video of prospects.
Like saying, oh, it was a really windy day that day. Like, why on earth is the head recruiter explaining to this bunch of numpties who clearly haven't seen this guy before the video? Like, is this helping their decision-making at all? Like, why have you not done this already?
Yeah. And there was the other things. If you watch the St Kilda video, it's all about them firstly trying to get into the top 10 to draft Jai Caldwell, who went to the Giants, and then they're trying to get back into the end of the first round to draft Riley Collier-Dawkins. And sort of the question was, right, where would Collier-Dawkins go in next year's draft? And they're saying, yeah, probably around 10, you know, bit raw, big upside. And then What was extraordinary was, so Carlton ended up trading next year's first-round draft pick for a swap with Adelaide's first-round draft pick for pick 19. And at they offered the same deal to Port Adelaide. And I was struck, why doesn't it matter who you're offering the deal to? Like, you know, Adelaide's meant to have a better season than Port Adelaide next year. Like, doesn't that matter?
The other thing is when they were talking about it, you know, Adelaide had 2 picks, 16 and 19. They were unclear about which picks they were or which picks Adelaide had. And they're also unclear which pick they were bargaining over. A, why haven't you fixed this up ages ago with Adelaide if this scenario went down? And B, like the difference between the value in 16 and 19 is quite high. So surely, you know, as you say, and, you know, Soss goes in, tries to get 16, gets shot down in about half a second, gives up, goes to 19. But it was like, you know, it was like there was no concept at all that these were two different deals.
Yeah. And St Kilda very quickly twigged that Carlton, because they were offering an extra second-round draft pick to sweeten the deal, but it was striking that Adelaide was so keen on getting Carlton's pick instead of St Kilda, and St Kilda's not going to be great next year. They did the deal with Carlton. None of sort of all of the cautionary steps that you would expect to stake. They did. That was amazing. But for me, the two reassuring takeaways was, Liam Stoker may be a great player, but gee, the Carlton process was pretty messy. And, yeah, St Kilda really like Riley Collier-Dawkins too. Yeah, it's quite reassured.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that is nice. And as we do, as Andrew Sloman does. Mm. So, I think it's time to hand over to the interview with Slowey.
Let's do it.
Firstly, g'day, gents. Long-time listener. I was going to say long-time listener, first-time caller, but that's, I'll save that for talk back. Yeah, look, I stay did off the blog last year. What's that?
Stay off talk back.
I will. Yeah, I think so. I did the blog last year, and I was the club very kindly. I thought I didn't hear anything about it or about ratings and things ever since, and I thought, oh, maybe they've forgotten about it. But they did ask me again about a week before the camp and was only too happy to do it. And I must admit, I find it rather therapeutic to either type away late at night or very early in the morning, which I was doing up in Queensland, and just reinforce some of the experiences that we had. So, yeah, did enjoy it. Have put it out there on social media only to actors or to inform the fans, of which we have hundreds of thousands. So, yeah, it was an honour to do.
So, Slowey, this isn't your first time attending one of these camps. How do you think they've changed over the years?
Yep, this is my fifth. My first one was New Zealand in 2010, where I live. They've changed quite a lot. I think the first really main one I went on was Arizona. I mean, I went to New Zealand, but I was only there for part of the time. Arizona was the first main one in 2011, and we probably did about 80%, 80 to 90% football skills, and probably, you know, 10 to 20% strategy, and no sort of mind and leadership stuff. Whereas over the, you know, since Arizona in 2011, the Emma Murray, Shane McCurry, Richmond Man sort of element is probably got bigger. I think the club certainly take the view that, you know, if you're drafted, you can kick on a left, on your left and right, and handball and do all of that. So I think they're focusing more on the soft skills and particularly around connectivity, which has been a lot of press on in the last 2 years. And yeah, the Richmond Man stuff that Shane McCurry led, and also Emma Murray was on camp this year. Doing meditation, mindfulness, and yoga elements was really interesting, and that's something that certainly wasn't around in the Arizona and New Zealand eras. So, yeah, far more of the soft skills, which, you know, is to sit in on those sessions. I'm not going to go into them, but to sit in on those sessions and see some of the exercises that the players do is really interesting.
Slowey, I'm dying to ask you who's training the house down. But before I do, I just wanted to ask a supplementary question about that. And, you know, because of various opportunities you've been able to take part in, you straddle the line is that you see a bit of the inside world and know the players, you know, better as human beings than many of us would, and the coaches too. What do you think the biggest misconception amongst ordinary fans is, or what do you think the thing that would most surprise them if they went on the camp like you did? What's the thing that we're not appreciating from the outside?
Yeah, look, I mean, that's a really good call. I mean, there was one thing that really stood out on this camp for me as a you know, a 51 week outsider looking in, I suppose, is that possessions, contested footy, all the sort of the standard metrics that you look at in the Herald Sun on a Sunday morning. I know, Andy, you look at them because I take a photo for you every week. those sort of stats are not overly important. Well, they're important, but there's other indicators for coaches that I've become more aware of in the last camp, and that's around structurally how we play. And guarding space. I suppose the best example is, and I'm not going to use the technical terms, but if a player is in a certain position and blocks an avenue out from a clearance for the opposition, I mean, they don't get a stat for that. But they might force the player to take the ball in a direction that we want them to take the ball and not the way they want to take the ball, if that makes any sense.
Mm.
So if a player is guarding space, opposition player with the ball looks up, sees that player there and goes, no, I can't go there. I'm going to go to another spot, which we are ahead of the game on. So the coaches are looking at how players stand in contests. It doesn't go on the stat sheet. It doesn't get reported anywhere statistically, but in the video analysis, it's quite an important part of the way we play. It's how we set up, particularly defensively. And that's something that became far more apparent to me on the camp, and something, you know, and it came up in a weird conversation with one of the other attendees who said, you know, player A always seems to be out on his own and not marking anyone. And to which coach replied, well, there's a good reason why he's doing that. And he's actually really good at defensively marking space and actually controlling the exit of the opposition so we can capitalise on it. And that to me was something that really stood out. This camp. There's stats around kicks, marks, handballs, contested possessions, all of that. But one of the other key things is just structurally, how does a player contribute to our patterns? And yeah, that was a standout to me.
Mm.
So it's a bit hard to explain, but if you saw a video of it, it would all become quite apparent to you that, you know, players are rewarded for being in the right spot, but they may not get the ball.
Yeah, I think I remember from one of Ryan Garthwaite's games last year, he had about 10 touches for the day, but he ran 14 kilometres on field. Yeah. And I think a lot of that would have been, you know, running to neutralise space.
Correct, yeah. Unrewarded running is measured. And, you know, players that do work hard around running, and it can be unrewarded. That's an important element, I think, of our strategy.
Mm. Slowly, you mentioned about the importance of the Richmond man stuff. I mean, how difficult or easy do you think it is for the new guys? I mean, there's quite a few first and second year players on the list now. Do you think that makes the transition to AFL easier for them?
That's a good question, Nick. I think the first years always find the camp an interesting. Oh, look, this is just from generalities, but I always find it an interesting experience because it's probably the first sort of trip they've done away collectively as a group. You know, the importance around connectivity and getting to know your teammates and doing exercises around that. I think it's no secret that connectivity, you know, is one of our key values as a playing group. And, you know, the camp is important, I think, for first and second years to build that connectivity and also for their teammates to understand them and celebrate them as people. And they could be different, they could be diverse, and one of the great things we do as a club is to celebrate diversity. And getting to know people as individuals, you know, the camp and the Richmond Man stuff would be important to the first years and second years to build on that and for the group to get to know them. So I think it's a pretty important element. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into drafting individuals, as you both know, from they could come from many varied backgrounds and many, you know, other states and what have you, and it's a big change in their life. So understanding them and embracing them for what they are, I think, is vital, and it's one thing that all measures suggest we do well.
Oh, fascinating, Chloe. Now, Chloe, the Tony Madigan Award... Mangan Award, apologies. Yeah. Went to, I've never heard it said out loud before. Went to Comrade Markov, Oleg Markov.
It did.
Can you talk us through a bit how you win the award and what struck you about Oleg's conduct at the camp? And supplementary question is, how big is your man crush on RCD right now?
How long have we got? The Tony Mangan Award, Tony was a dear Coterie, former Coterie member who I knew incredibly well, went on all the initial camps and what have you, and sadly died in a plane crash. Tony had eight key value sets we defined as what we call Tony's non-negotiables, which more or less dovetail into the Richmond Man type values. And there's a group of helpers that go on the camp, and we basically assess, it's our view on who on the camp lives up to the value set, those eight particular values, who lives up to those the best while on camp. Now, in fairness, our leadership group of Rance, Cochin, Riewoldt always do live up to those. So we more or less look at a player who's there or thereabouts who really displays those eight non-negotiables, and Oleg was the one. We do a voting process, so there were 15 players who had votes against them, so that's a great sign. Mm-hmm. Oleg won not by a landslide, but he got over the line. He displayed you know, just in all the drills, he was incredibly competitive. He communicated incredibly well, was always upbeat, supportive, honest, and you know, was really throwing himself into the drills with gusto, and we thought that he displayed all the he was the best at camp for displaying Tony's values. So he got the award, and he's certainly you can just see that he's done quite a deal of upper body work, and he's really focused on having a big year as Oleg, I believe. So that was really the Tony Mangan Award. I mean, it's not to discount what Alex, Jack, Trent, all the leaders do, but Oleg is an up-and-comer, and he won it. The previous year's winners, Jaden Short, has won it, and Jake Batchelor's won it. I'm just trying to think of the previous one. I think Brody, of course, Brody last year. So both Brody and Jaden went on to have great years after that. They won the award, and we're hoping that form line continues with Oleg.
Nice.
Mm. So
RCD. Mm. If I put my fan hat on, I think RCD and Jack Ross were. They've got a lot of potential, not to say that Fraser and Luke haven't. They were both great on camp, as was Sid, hates Sydney. They were all great. Just the sheer, I suppose, physique of RCD and Jack. Jack, they both threw themselves into the drills with gusto and were incredibly competitive with all drills. And also, I think we're structurally aware of, we're getting themselves into the right positions. And, it was very impressive. I mean, RCD is about 6 foot three. I'm 6 foot three. Incredibly mobile. Jack is a bit stockier, a bit shorter, but incredibly competitive at all drills, particularly running drills. His physique, very much like Jack Graham, in that you could almost say that he'd be ready for senior footy. They're impressive. And, look forward to how they evolve during the 2019 season. It'll be very interesting to watch.
Well, I think that's exactly what people are wanting to hear. What about the second-year players?
I think I like Jack's work, Jack Higgins, of course.
Mm.
His camp effort was great. Worked hard, both forward and a little bit of mid stuff, I think. He was great. Liam Baker has showed incredible tenacity in forward drills, particularly on the defensive side. Really chased hard, worked hard, and has a certain degree of mongrel spunk about him, which I think we all know he's got, to use the traditional phrase. And Paddy Naish, as I wrote in the blog, had a one-on-one Dojo 5-ring wrestle with Jack Higgins, and I think early doors the bookmakers would have had Jack as favourite. But that wasn't the case. The end result was Paddy Naish, I don't know what the technical terms are, but certainly rolled Jack over, and that was great to watch, particularly at the end of a hard session during the day, to watch guys go at it in basically in wrestling, when the lactic acid's built up and all of that. But, yeah, Paddy, again, just threw himself into all the drills with gusto, and some of the sprint, the longer oval sprint work, he was at the front of the line, didn't take a backward step, and we all know he's silky by foot, but certainly seems to have worked on his tank, I would have thought. So, look forward to see what young Paddy delivers as well for the 2019 season. So there's a lot of excitement there, and we had an exercise that we had to do. Sorry, guys, I'm just sort of digressing here, but there was an exercise that we had to do on Wednesday night where we had to select our best 22, and it was effectively like a mock match committee where you had to face Messrs. Balm, Hardwick, Livingston, Carousella, McQualter, Kingsley, and basically sell your – and Leper – and sell your team to them. And it was your 22, round one Carlton, based on every player being available. I suggest you do it, and you can't have a four-man – you can only have a four-man interchange bench. There were some there were some players that were very unlucky to miss out, and some of them, I think, were even possibly in our grand final team. So it's an amazing list of riches at the minute, and it's very hard if you had every player available to come up with your best 22 without any hard luck stories, which I think is great.
Sounds like an awfully fun exercise for the casual fan who's, you know, it's very easy to Monday morning quarterback the team selection, but I'm sure it's much harder to justify it when you've got Neil Balm sitting on the other side of the table too.
Very much so. Barbie is a ripper. He's like Yoda and just takes it all in.
Taller, fatter Yoda.
Well, yes, sorry. Yeah, that's... Maybe not the physicality, but yeah, I suppose. I meant that comparison in terms of being a wise man. But, yeah, he will listen and then will nail you right between the eyes, and you sort of go, yeah, I can't believe I left out Kane Lambert. And, yeah, so it's an amazing exercise to do, and, yes, it's when you are faced with the members of match committee and they can – They've got all the knowledge behind them. It's quite challenging, but fun all the same. It was a really good way to do it.
I guarantee you that as much as I like you, that if for some reason you had to fill in coach for 1 week and you left out a fit Kane Lambert, I'd be the first to call for your sack.
well, I did it with two other members who shall remain nameless, but... I was saying to them as we sort of picked our mids and ruck, I said, there's one we're missing. They said, no, there's not. I said, there's one we're missing. They said, no, they're not. And I said, what about Kane Lambert? And they went, oh, yeah. And then made it expletive. And anyway, we got Kane in into the side, but it was right at the last minute. And that's rather embarrassing on our behalf because it just shows you the level of riches that we have, and how we could forget Kane Lambert is just staggering, but we did. And but he certainly made the side. He was almost flown in Brian Peak style by helicopter at the end.
So, Slowey, aside from even prior to your newfound media fame. We've known each other for a little while. Proud to call you a friend. And we sat next to each other on grand final day.
We did. And my, I think the bruising in my knee has just subsided.
Well, what's your overwhelming impression of those four quarters of football sitting next to each other?
Look, I wasn't really emotional until you became emotional. I think you know the point that I'm talking about. That's when Basher I started goal. To sink. What's that?
The Basher goal.
The Basher goal. When you turned around, grabbed my knee, and were in tears saying we're in front. I then became emotional and realised that, yeah, this is quite a big deal. And thank you for that, because I think I was, I don't know what was wrong with me early. I was just, whether it was nerves or what have you, but I was just not taking it in holistically and until you grabbed my knee and gave me some Emma Murray mindfulness. and then, yeah, it was just a, there was a couple of things. I mean, other than sharing it with you, which was wonderful. As you know, Bruce Monteith was sitting in front of us. And so, you know, to have the honour, I think we told him that he's now no longer the last premiership captain. He thought that was great.
Yeah. But maybe the first person to do that.
Yeah, we might have been.
the first of about 500.
Yeah, and Varley Crow, who Neville Crow's wife, she was sitting down the edge of the end of our row, and to hug her after the final siren was, and just have a chat to her about Nev. That was awesome. And also, just around us were a few players like that we ran into, like Troy Chaplin and Matty D and Andrew Brown, Scotty Turner. And, you know, they were to see the genuine level of excitement on their faces. And there was a phrase used up at the Gold Coast about, you know, Richmond players, former ex, what have you, will always be Richmond men. And you could see that they were Richmond men on that day. And another Richmond man we ran into up on the Gold Coast, Anthony Miles, and he's a Richmond man. And, yeah, just reinforced that you may change colours in your playing career, but you'll always be a Richmond man. And there were some elements of that grand final day that mirrored that for me. But overriding, to sit next to you, Andy, that day was fantastic. And to see your joy... And the joy of everyone around us was just immense.
Oh, look, I've allowed myself the indulgence of, you know, thinking about what the next one would be like. But yeah, it is a, you know, I mean, it's all. I'm sure it'd be fantastic. But yeah, it's going to be hard to top that one.
Well, I have got an answer for that. But I probably can't say it on a podcast, but there are, I think every club has ideals and aims and goals and all of that. And there's some that we have as a club. And I mean, any goal, I think, for any club's exciting, but yeah, I'm excited. I can't say what it is. I won't say what it is because on a, no offense, guys, but,
Well, I've got one, mate. Yep. I've got this is just a purely a fan's perspective, and maybe, you know, just getting over the top of a big rival like Collingwood in the last quarter of a grand final. That would be gold.
That would be. And continually getting over rivals like in such a manner on grand final day over an elongated era would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Indeed.
Sorry, I'm just choosing my words carefully, but yeah, it's. I think the list is exciting. I think the way we've trained, it was a high load week up on the Gold Coast, and the way we trained, nothing was too much for the players. They took it all on with great gusto, achieved, and I think all the KPIs were hit, as far as I'm aware. And, it's exciting. Always is at this time of year. I know every club can say that. Mm. But, been on a few camps. And list is strong. Endeavour is strong. Connectivity is great. Let's watch this space.
Mm. Well, I don't think we're going to top that. So thanks very much. Thanks very much for your time, Slowey. Always appreciate it. I know the listeners enjoy the chance to sort of get at least a peek behind the closed doors of what's going on.
Pleasure. And, as I said, long-time listener. You've assisted passing long hours on aircraft listening to your podcast. So very honoured to be on.
Thanks, Slowey. Catch up soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
For the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years, this one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wake until the first one.
Silence goes. Like the tiger of old, the storm and revolt will win the tiger.
Just a celebration of all good things Richmond right now.
Come from Darwin.
Makes rants.
Never not going to go, was he? Was he?
Oh, the pick up from Conjun. Left foot snap. The goal of the game.
Trent, Dimmer and Renegade deserve all the credit. They've built something fantastic and they just got to keep riding away.
Martin, 3 votes.